Good morning, everyone. Welcome. Thanks for coming. This topic today, I think, while it may focus on the east side, the eastern suburbs of Syracuse, I think it's an issue that all of us face, no matter where in Onondaga County that we live. I know for myself and Camillus, my backyard often looks like a petting zoo. So anyway, we have today with us Fayetteville Mayor Mark Olson, and Mark graduated from Fayetteville Manlius School District and attended SUNY College of Morrisville. He is currently Vice President of Sales Marketing for Gearhart's Equipment in East Syracuse. Mark has been a member of the Fayetteville Fire Department since 1981, recently retiring as captain. He has served in various roles within the Firemen's Association, as well as the Planning, Zoning, and Historic Boards in Fayetteville. Mark was elected as Mayor of Fayetteville in 2004. Dr. Brian Underwood is a wildlife expert at SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry and has been studying deer throughout the Northeast for 20 years. Among his many affiliations and projects, Dr. Underwood heads a research team of National Park Service and Humane Society staff at Fire Island National Seashore, the goal of which is to determine if the population effect can be accomplished for free-ranging population of white-tailed deer. Both Mark and Professor Underwood will discuss what is currently being done to manage the deer population in the eastern suburbs of Syracuse and the long-term impact if a broader management program isn't adopted. Please join me in welcoming first Brian Underwood.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning. Appreciate you coming out on such a cold and blustery day. It wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be, so I'm grateful for that. Tomorrow could be interesting, but I'd like to just spend a few minutes here. I want to thank the organizers for inviting me and the mayor of Fayetteville here. Thank you all. Talk a little bit about my experience with these kinds of problems, probably in about three dozen locations throughout the upper Midwest and the Northeast. I study deer as one of the things that I do. I do lots of things. I wear many hats, but deer has kind of buttered my bread for almost 30 years now, and I'm happy to do it. Despite the issues that are associated with deer, I still enjoy watching them, you know. But they can cause a pretty interesting, make our lives fairly interesting, particularly when they're in high abundance. So what happens, by virtue of their size, you know, deer are not small. 100 pounds, give or take, their feeding habits and their activity patterns, they create a series of fairly unique quality of life issues for people. They serve as host to the adult phase of a tick that transmits Lyme disease, which is a serious public health issue that we're experiencing throughout New York State, but particularly in Onondaga County. Oops, sorry, I went the wrong way. You know, I'm still not getting used to all this technology. They also cause some pretty substantial property damage, you know, to our cars and our landscapes and our gardens. This is for those of you who are avid gardeners. A deer is enemy number one, really. And they degrade our green infrastructure, which we are have learned over the last two or three decades is, provides lots of ecosystem services to our neighborhoods and our communities. They prevent tree and plant regeneration, and this contributes to soil erosion, which is not a good way to manage water in a city like ours. So if we had a goal, we would want to have a solution that really benefits all residents, you know, works toward the common good, builds unity, we hope, through consensus, doesn't unnecessarily burden property owners, and exhibits a high likelihood of success. If I had to write out a recipe for an ideal solution, this is what it would look like. Unfortunately, this isn't rarely the case. but it doesn't mean it's impossible. But there are some pretty significant challenges to overcome. I throw this up here mostly for the benefit of my friend in the back of the room. Nader Maroon is the 5th District Common Counselor of the City of Syracuse. He hears about deer every day. He gets phone calls about deer. Now, I'm not kidding. Every day. So he has worked tirelessly over the last 4 or 5 years to try to raise the awareness of the issues that deer cause in our communities, to provide information to concerned residents and lawmakers. And he's, you know, really committed himself to try to find a positive solution. So again, hats off to Nader. So let's just talk about Lyme disease for a minute. The real black areas are sort of ground zero for Lyme disease in the Northeast. You can see there are two concentrations, one in the upper Midwest, one on the eastern coast in Connecticut. It was named after Lyme, Connecticut. All those little gray fringe areas, though, is what Lyme disease has been doing over the last 3 decades. It's spreading out. And it's certainly, we're right in the bullseye. We're right there. Lyme disease is in Onondaga County. And as you can see, over the last 15, 16 years or so, the reported cases of Lyme disease is starting to increase exponentially in our communities. So it's here, it's a real problem, and it's something that we cannot ignore. This is one of my favorite places near the university. This is Morningside Community Gardens, surrounded by what I would consider sort of a semi-deer-proof fence. Not really a deer-proof, but I'm guessing it might slow them down a little bit. As a good friend of mine and a former colleague says, these are plant prisons. And I don't have to remind you that hundreds of deer are killed every year in Onondaga County. We studied this problem 15 years ago throughout the county and stopped counting at 500 deer 15 years ago. And for an urban deer, getting killed by a car is the number one cause of death for an urban deer, just so you folks know. To the untrained eye, this looks like a pretty tranquil place to be in the middle of our city. If you look carefully, however, from about my height and down to the ground, there isn't really much green in there. It's mostly brown. A deer weighs about 100 pounds, eats 8 to 10 pounds of vegetative material every day to survive and reproduce. That's one deer, okay? So they, in numbers, can greatly impact the biodiversity of plants and animals from about here down. You get lower ground nesting songbirds, fewer small mammals, and almost non-existent reproduction of flora in the understory. This causes a pretty substantial amount of erosion, soil erosion, which is an absolute travesty in a city because we need those green spaces to provide they're responsible for our quality of life. And for those of you who are particularly aware, you can go out to any cemetery in the Eastside communities and see the immediate impacts of deer browsing. These are all obviously arborvitae for those of you who have them planted as hedges around your yard. You know that last winter they got hammered pretty hard. Everybody's arborvitae got hammered last year. That's what from about there down, that's deer browsing. So they trim those hedges up. So there's not a gardener out there doing that for you, by the way. They don't pay somebody to go out and do that. This is all deer browsing. And these just happen to be species of trees that actually retain the history of historical browsing. So to the untrained eye, sometimes difficult to see. All I'm suggesting is you go to any cemetery and you will obviously see these impacts. Okay. So those who study this problem suggest that solving these complex issues with animals, wild animals, and people revolves around an 8-step process. It starts with concern, involvement, the issue, and I would say we're kind of at that spot right there at defining the issues. We've gone way beyond concern, involvement, and issue identification. We're now at a phase where we have to explore some alternatives, look at their alternatives, pick a choice, or the consequences, pick one, implement it, evaluate it, and then we start back at ground zero again. But as you can see, we're really at step four in an eight-step evolution of figuring these problems out. Now, in a place like the Eastside Communities, there are a number of significant challenges. Primarily, is that there's very little public property. Most of the property is privately owned inside of this area. Now, not everybody shares this challenge, which is why deer management, a one-size-fits-all, doesn't work, because it matters where you can do these kinds of things. There are multiple jurisdictions. There's the city of Syracuse, the towns of DeWitt and Onondaga, the county of Onondaga. We've got a couple of state parks nearby that should be at the table thinking about these things. And of course, being a university town, there's a wide range in education, opinion, and means when it comes to dealing with these issues. So what can we do? What what kind of options do we have available to us? With Lyme disease, we can reduce our personal risk. We can reduce the tick population. That's the critter that carries the bacterium in their gut that makes you sick. We could reduce the mouse population. They're the ones that actually harbor the disease organism in their bloodstream. By the way, deer don't. Deer is a dead end for Lyme disease. The deer cannot give you Lyme disease. They can give you the tick that can give you Lyme disease, but deer can't. Or we could reduce the deer population. DVCs is an acronym for deer vehicle collisions. We can try to put up more signs. We can try to slow drivers down. We can put more deer crossing signs out there, or we could reduce the deer population. For nuisance abatement, we could build more fences. We could spray with all kinds of snake oil. We could haze the deer. We could throw rocks at them from our porch if we want, or we could reduce their numbers. But in order to do that, we need to have some criteria that we could evaluate these options with. And I've given you five here. Now, not everybody will agree that this list is comprehensive or even the right one. But I think we really want to find out how well does it work, how much does it cost, how fast will this take, can we sustain it over the long term, and can we live with ourselves the next day? Notice that all of these issues have deer reduction as a possible alternative in them, and I'll let you pay attention to that. Whoops, I'm going to go back to that. We're going to just evaluate it with a simple stoplight example, remembering that if we want to know how effective is it, how much does it cost, how fast, can we sustain it over the long term, and can we live with ourselves in the morning? So I'm just going to pop these. There's deer management. You know, all three of those issues are on the left, our evaluation criteria, and across the top. Really what you need to pay attention to are the colors of the circles in all three of those deer management options. And notice that they're not the same for each issue. And the long story short is that reducing deer does not universally solve all your problems. It helps. Don't get me wrong, but it doesn't solve them all equally effectively. What you will notice, though, is that deer management is expensive in all of these options. The sustainability is questionable in the long term, and I can talk to you about more about that later, or I'll ask you to ask me the question when we're all done. And then finally, deer management is always controversial. Come back. What should we do? You can't throw your hands up in the air. I'm saying what we should do is everything that has a green or a yellow button on it, we should be doing. Period. End of story. So we should be reducing our personal risk. We should be managing ticks and mice in our backyards. All of those things are very effective. They make a difference. They're not terribly controversial, and they're reasonably effective. So we should be doing at least those things. And then everything else we should continue to talk about and work through. So why is deer management controversial? Because not everyone will agree that there is a problem. So what you need to do is to articulate your desired future condition. What do you want your community to look like in 5 years relative to deer? Not everyone will agree with the evaluation criteria. I've given you five, and I've listed them in a certain order. You may disagree that the list is inadequate or incomplete, and you might also disagree that the order is incorrect. These are not trivial problems, by the way. This is where most communities struggle the mightiest. And then finally, not everyone will agree on the preferred alternative, especially when it comes to selecting options that include lethal versus non-lethal alternatives. So let's get the deer mythology out of the way right now. Non-viable deer management options, trap and transfer, it's not legal anywhere. Nobody wants your deer. Population scale fertility control, it's infeasible. It doesn't mean fertility control doesn't work, and it doesn't mean it won't work in your area. It just means that there are a very specific set of criteria under which fertility control might work, and those need to be evaluated in consultation with experts. Large area exclusion by fencing, it was way too expensive. Any of you have put up a perimeter fence around your own property knows how expensive that is, and that requires maintenance as well. And if you ever want to see what that actually causes, I'll point you to a few places in northern New Jersey where that makes life interesting, to say the least. Introduction of predators. They're already here. Your coyotes are here. Coyotes kill baby deer. They kill weak and debilitated deer in the wintertime as well. Some of you have seen the carnage that coyotes produce in your backyards. I like it. I think it's kind of cool. I'm a biologist, but not everybody agrees with me on that point. So what are viable deer management tools? Regulated legal harvest. This is hunting. Cheapest option, but it requires a lot of planning. And what we found in urban areas is that the interest tends to wane over time. A good example would be the town of Irondequoit. It has been operating a bow hunt in the town for almost 20 years now, quite successfully, to manage their urban deer issues. The problem is hunters spend a lot of money and a lot of time, and while they enjoy the hunting process, I hunt, I enjoy being out in the woods, sleeping in the tree stand, I like doing all that stuff, but I also have a strong interest and desire to actually get a deer to fill my tag, right? So they volunteer really well when the deer population, there's a deer behind every tree, all right? When it gets to start looking like the proverbial needle in the haystack, it's an especially motivated hunter that's out there helping you out, okay? And then culling. Culling is not hunting, by the way. Culling is a tool. It's a job. It's killing deer. Culling is expensive, but it's expedient if it's done professionally. And it generally induces a pretty immediate reduction in deer density. So these are the guys that swoop down in helicopters in the dark of night, slide down ropes with, you know, night vision goggles. They take away your deer, and the next day you don't even know they were there, right? I'm just kidding, okay? They're actually very good at what they do, however, I will attest to that. I know many of them. Many of them I consider friends. And then localized fertility control. There are several options. Fertility control is expensive, and at minimum, you're looking at a 10-year management horizon. It'll be 5 years before you see anything happening to the deer population, and it takes 10 years to achieve a 50% reduction in the number of deer. So just half of the deer would be gone in 10 years. That was our experience. Thank you for the introduction. That on Fire Island, where we were doing that experiment, by the way. And I'm just about done. The last thing I want to remind you of, though, when you start to engage deer population management, it's an all or nothing proposition. Once in, never out. Sounds like the Marine Corps or something, doesn't it? So it's once in, never out. Once you start, there is no stopping. Because as soon as you stop, the deer population is going to be right back where it started in no time flat. They have tremendous capacity of rebounding. Okay, so that requires a long-term commitment of both time, money, resources, and a lot of planning. So expectations. It took 30 years for this deer population to get where it is now. I've been studying this deer population for 30 years. So it's taken that long for us to get to here. To expect that you're going to solve it in a week, not a reasonable expectation. We have a lot of information, though, that most communities don't have. You're lucky you live in an area that's just blessed with all of these universities, right? People actually looking for a job to do, me included. So we actually have a pretty good handle on both the abundance and the distribution of deer throughout the Eastside communities and elsewhere. We're planning to expand our efforts a little bit if we can. There's ground zero right there. Anybody can see the big dots means there's more deer. Little dots means there's fewer deer. And then the warm colors means these are concentrations of deer. And the cool colors means there are not so many. Okay, this map should be of no surprise to anybody. And there we are right there. Okay, as we sit. Yeah, the unrealistic expectations. There will be no more Lyme disease. All deer will be vaporized. There will be no more deer vehicle collisions. And those dang things won't be eating my flowers and vegetables anymore. No, not a reasonable expectation. What is reasonable? There will be dramatically fewer deer conflicts, substantial reduction in your Lyme disease risk, lowered number of deer vehicle collisions, and a reduction in all those bad things that deer tend to do to our plants and our gardens. It's simply unreasonable to expect wild animals not to respond to habitat that we've created for them. That's not reasonable. That's having your cake and eating it too. Not allowed. So where are we? We're here. We need to be there. And we've got a long way to go here. My advice is to develop a plan. A plan contains pertinent information about the deer population. How many of them are there? Where are they? Explore all reasonable alternatives. How long will it take? How much will it cost? And then by doing that, you have the greatest opportunity of finding a set of alternatives that everyone can agree on and move forward with that would provide you with the highest likelihood of actually getting something done. So I appreciate your time and your patience, and I'd like to sit down now. Thank you.
Well, good morning, everyone. Can you hear me okay? It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me to speak. Boy, if you want to stir up a community, talk about deer management plans. In the Village of Fayetteville, we have a long history of providing a quality of life. And this is really something that has come to us a long time ago. And we really chose to not ignore it, we didn't know how to deal with it. And in 2004, when I became mayor, I got my first complaint. So I think Nader was saying he's gotten a complaint every day since 2012. It started in 2004, and it started out as, they're eating my landscaping. It's true, but very hard to deal with. And no one had a plan how to deal with that. And for years and years, we dealt with it by trying to get somebody to help us. And we had no willing partners. We would talk to state parks. We would talk to DEC. We would talk to our elected officials in the state at the federal level. There really wasn't a mechanism. There wasn't anybody that said, I've got the answer. I've got the ability to help you. So we just kind of did what every other community did in our area and just said, okay, well, thank you very much, and we'll do the best we can. And we really didn't, to be honest, do a lot with it. 2014, I'm sitting in my house reading the Sunday paper, and there is the Village of Trumansburg. And there's an article all about what the Village of Trumansburg did. And I went, okay, what do I do? Do I just ignore this article in the paper, or do I do something about it? And I really chose to do something about it and to bring this subject up. Hindsight, I got to tell you, I got to be very honest, it's been one of the most difficult things. I've been in elected office for 20 years. This has been one of the most difficult subjects to deal with. There is pros and cons to both sides. There's passions on both sides. But at the end of the day, I look at it as elected officials. We're there to provide service to our residents in their time of need and when they don't need something, but we need to take care of problems. And that's our job as elected officials. So we started this process in 2014, and we read through. We contacted the Village of Trumansburg. We met with them, found out exactly what worked, what didn't work. And then in 2015, we formed a DEER committee and met with the DEC. And we have 11 people on our committee, and they are residents, they are wildlife experts, they are elected officials from the town. We have an ecologist from SU on our committee. So we went to the community and said, what do you want to do? And we put together, and I don't have a presentation, but we put together a 4-page deer management plan. The DEC requires a deer management plan to deal with this. And in our deer management plan, that's 8 pages, excuse me, it's double-sided, we put together a long-term solution, and I was glad to hear him say, this is not just a one-year program. This is going to be a program that's going to last the Village of Fayetteville residents a long time, because this problem did take 30 years to create, and it's going to take 30 years to solve. But in our village, we were very fortunate that we had 11 people step up and are willing to help go through this process. So then we met with the DEC, we met with ESF, Cornell, SU, New York State DEC, New York State Parks, USDA, and the New York Conference of Mayors. So we went to a lot of people, got a lot of resources to our committee, and the committee met probably for 8 months before they were willing to or ready to put out a program. So when they did finally get us this, we reviewed it at the village trustee level, and we decided that it was time to have public forums and public meetings. So if you saw in the news, you saw some very interesting things. The public in general was supportive in the village, and then outside of the village, it wasn't supportive. It was a different dynamic because the village residents had been involved with the destruction of the landscape. They had been in the car accidents, and we had heard people say, it's just a car accident. Well, there's a deductible. There's damage to your car. There's how do you get to work? How do you get a loaner car? How do you go through all that? So there is little things that happen. The Lyme disease, I'll give you an example of what it means to somebody. We didn't do presentations together, but quality of life is something that I have worked on since becoming mayor that I think is very important. You can choose to live anywhere. You can choose to be any part of any community. We want you to be a part of the Village of Fayetteville. We want a quality of life that our residents have come to love and expect and to manage. A lady said to me, I've lost the two loves of my life, and I'm knocking door to door this last few weeks because I'm running for re-election. And I said, well, what happened? And she said, my husband died. And she said, I got Lyme disease, and I love to garden, and I can't go outside anymore. That is not quality of life. That is not what I think is what we want to strive as a community. Everybody wants to do what they want to do that makes them happy. And this lady cannot do that anymore. Then, a couple days later, I knock on a door, and it's 7 o'clock at night, and she said, I'm sorry, I can't answer the door, or I can't sign your petition. I have to go to bed. I have Lyme disease. 7 o'clock, a 53-year-old lady. This is a problem, and everybody in our village knew it was a problem, and everybody knows that doing nothing isn't working. So I'm very proud that it's been difficult, but I'm very proud that we're taking proactive steps to deal with this. So we went through this process of public input and public information sessions, and we learned a lot from that. We started out with a program that was going to be volunteers and bow hunters, and we were going to do a culling program. We had the program all set up. In our deer management plan, we put two caveats in it. One, it could be this volunteer program, or it could be done by a professional service. When we finished our service or our public forums, we got a call from the USDA. And the USDA said, can we please meet with you? We want to give you some helpful tips to help you manage your program. They came to the village. They surveyed the village. They looked at our deer management plan, and they said, we have an option for you. We have ability to help you do this better, faster, and more effectively and more humanely. And after meeting with the USDA, we decided that this was the way to go. It gives accountability. It's a faster program. It's a more effective program. And next year, if we need it again, because this has become a yearly thing in the Village of Fayetteville's annual budget, if it becomes a problem that we can't get everything that we need to get done this year, then we'll go to the USDA next year. If not, if they have success this year and we have a great program, then we'll start the deer culling program with the volunteers. But Brian is completely right. The committee came back to us and said, we're worried about burnout. We're worried about what if they don't get the deer that they think they're going to get? What if we have a problem? It's really hard to hold a volunteer accountable. So the USDA is accountable. They have this program right now. They have started looking at our sites in the village. And I brought a map that's going to be very hard for you to see. But the village is made up of approximately 2 square miles, and this is going to be very hard to see. But they have selected 15 sites in the village. Most of those sites are on public land. We've been able to use our public parks and our public infrastructure to take care of most of the sites. We have had residents say that they are willing to come in and allow the USDA to use their site. So we are filling out that permit process right now. The way this process works is the USDA comes in, they do site surveys, they've done those site surveys, and now we are selecting the sites through DEC. We have been issued our DEC permit, and we have, I brought them today if anybody wanted to see them, we have the 4 of the 12 sites approved right now. And now what the USDA is doing is they're going through and they spend 3 weeks cammering and feeding to make sure that everything is correct in those areas. So they have started the camera process. They haven't started the feeding process, but they've started the camera process, and they're going through and making sure and evaluating these sites for the effectiveness of the deer. We have another partner besides USDA, and that's the County of Onondaga. They recognized that there was a problem in Onondaga County. They listened to Nader and others that there is a problem. So they put money in the budget this year. We've been able to reach out to Chairman Ryan McMahon, and he is working with the Village of Fayetteville to help us year one. And we think this is a great program. The Village of Fayetteville will be the beta village to do this program. And also, with the county and the city and the Village of Fayetteville and the USDA, we also have worked with the DEC. They have been great to deal with. They are, you know, when people say state government doesn't work, I don't tend to disagree, but I'll tell you the DEC does work. The DEC has been amazing to work with. They have helped us through everything because no village has done this. There's not a roadmap of success or even how to do it. The DEC has really worked with us to help us. The other thing that we're doing is we're doing a flyover. A lot of people in our village had 3 concerns. The humanity of doing this to a deer with an arrow. The USDA now uses a rifle or shotgun and silencers. 2, what if they miss? Well, the USDA says they have a 98% kill rate. So we're going to take that 98 over what was before. And then the thing was, how many do you have? And your data backed up what we already know. But we're going to do a flyover over the village at a cost of $4,500 to see what the impact of the deer in our village is and how many we have. One of the things that Fayetteville is very fortunate to have, but unfortunate to have, is Green Lake State Park. It's an absolute gem for our village. We border the Green Lakes, and so that we know where the deer are coming from. The State Parks has been a very good partner in this process. We've been dealing with Rob Hiltbrand, who's the regional director, and they know that there's issues. They know that, like you've said, Brian, there's issues with the undergrowth in the park. They know that's an issue. They have actually an area cordoned off to see what can happen by not having any animals in that area. But they are caught kind of in a tough situation. So they're watching this program. They're helping us with this program. They're giving us guidance and information, but they're not going to participate until they see how we do. The other byproduct of this, and I see a friend of mine from the food bank in the audience, every deer that is killed is going to a processor in Kirkville, and all that meat is then going to the food bank of Central New York. We don't have a desire to take the meat, and we want a win-win on this situation. So we're going to reduce the deer population, and then we're going to get the food to the food bank, and then people in this area who are starving can use that to eat and be nourished by this. And I think the statistic was last year 2,000 meals were served by or 2,000 meals of proteins was donated to the food bank from hunters. And this, we're thinking that we're going to be close to 100 deer culled in this program, maybe more. So we're hoping that, all of that will go and help the Central New York community. I apologize. I don't have a formal presentation. I just have what I went through and what happened in the Village of Fayetteville. You know, I'm asked many times, would you go through it again? I would, because doing nothing isn't working, and I'm just not a person that thinks that doing nothing works. Ignoring is why people are skeptical of politicians. A young man over here said to me, you're not a politician, you're elected official, and I am. I don't like the word politician because there's a stigma attached to that. And to me, I have a job to do as mayor, and that's give the residents of the Village of Fayetteville the best quality of life possible. And that's what I try to do every day, day in and day out. And just ignoring the deer population problem in the Village of Fayetteville wasn't working. So we hope this works. It will start in 2.5 weeks. And there'll be very little fanfare. And when we're done, we will release the data and of the flyover and how many that we did. And then next year, our committee is already committed to, or this year, excuse me, is already committed to working with public education, tick drags in the parks, working with residents on how to plant the proper landscaping, how to deal with it in your yard to get people to get their quality of life back. And that's what we're going to use the Deer Committee for now because of the USDA taking over most of the culling. And then next year, if we go through the program and we are going to do the bow hunters, then the Deer Committee will come back together and work on this. But this Deer Committee will now be a standing committee in the Village of Fayetteville, just like our parks, our zoning, our tree commission, everything that we do in the village, will have a standing deer commission to help us through these projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. Brian might want to join Mark up at the podium because I'm sure people have questions for both of you.
Good morning. Thank you for the presentation. I've always been a bit perplexed by this situation in that the public health parameters, the facts that were presented by the biologist are pretty profound. We all have friends who've had Lyme disease. I've had a couple of friends die from it ultimately because of complications. We know the dollars involved in the property damage, automobiles, all those statistics. So it's always been perplexing to me because the facts seem to drive you in a particular direction. I noted on the time frame up here, City of Syracuse, was that Syracuse's data? Started in 2012. We're now in 2016. He described we're not even halfway to resolving this problem in the city, which is concerning when you consider Zika virus is being dealt with in a couple of weeks. So that perplexes me. I wonder, and I'd like to say one thing is missing from the gentleman's presentation, and that's leadership. And it's a wonderful presentation, but without mentioning leadership, as demonstrated by Mr. Olson, these things just languish for years and waste a lot of time when the facts speak to dealing with this issue. Could you comment on why it's so long?
I have to disagree with you. We do have leadership. Our number one leader right back is, sits right back there. And obviously the devil is always in the details. You know, listen, you can stand up and you can complain that it's taking too long, but the fact of the matter is there's only so many ways you can do these kinds of things. And if you don't have the infrastructure to support those kinds of things, you have to build it. You literally have to build it from the ground up. As far as the data goes, I mean, you have a county health department. They are the folks that deal with county health, with health crises throughout the county. They understand that Lyme disease here is here. They are, you know, engaged in the process of educating people about Lyme disease. The fact of the matter is that there's a lot that can yet be done, that can be done without going to a great deal of expense, and it should be done, as I mentioned earlier. So, it's frustrating, but it's not unusual. This is sort of the normal evolution of how these problems get solved in communities. You'd like to think that reducing deer is going to solve all your problems, but I'm absolutely here to tell you that it will not. It will not take Lyme disease out of your backyard. I'm sorry to tell you that. It's just not something that people want to hear. You have to do other things to solve those problems. That's your question.
I know why Mark has been elected for the last 20 years, because I'm the young man that was questioning him. But when I hear Nader Maroon speaking and saying that he was contacted, he's contacted daily on the deer situation with telephone calls. I was the elected councilman in the very same district, and I never once got calls every day, but I never once got one for a deer. But one of the things that I did, the calls that I did get were basically about loose dogs in their neighborhood. And I joined together with Vince O'Neill, and we co-sponsored the leash law. And the old timers have recently been saying, when they see me, you're the guy that brought the deer in because you leased all of the dogs. So we did solve one problem then. Have we created another?
It's an interesting observation. There's no way to know for sure, but I can tell you that leash laws go a long way toward making deer friendly, right? They no longer have to fear the dogs that are running around, and that does change. Deer are very highly habituated to human presence, as you all know. In fact, there are people who are smart, very smart people all across the country who believe that deer will be our next domesticated species.
Yeah. 50 years ago, Lyme disease had not yet come into Onondaga County, but we had an abundance of hunters, which I believe kept that deer population under control. Is there some way we can encourage hunters?
Boy, I wish the DEC were here. I can't speak for the DEC. They're the regulatory agency for the management of wildlife in the state. You're absolutely right. So here's what happens. When you take, I'm not known for being a subtle person, but you take a piece of land that was formerly hunted by a farmer and several generations of his own and her own family, and you turn it into golf course. You've just created a deer haven, right? These become de facto refuges. So all this green space that we create by conversion of different land uses and the fact that we now put houses where once farmers and hunters roamed, that is part of the dynamic that we're talking about here. So the DC has done a few things, and you should ask them, but they've shortened the distance between that you can hunt to an occupied dwelling, trying to get hunters in closer to areas that they need to get them, because that's where the problems are. The problems are not out in town of Fabius. Well, they might be, but generally certainly not in the town of Spafford, right? The problems are in the towns that are adjacent to major metropolitan areas. Those are places that, hunters don't really like to hunt because they're self-conscious about it. People yell at them when they walk by the boundary when they got a gun on their shoulder, right? There are all kinds of interesting problems and issues there, but that is the problem. That you've hit the nail on the head.
This question relates to consensus, which we've been talking about. It's great that Fayetteville has a plan, but deer are not, they have no respect for municipal boundaries. Don't we need a much broader community plan, a county plan?
Yes, and I'm on that consensus committee on behalf of the Mayor's Association, and the county does, but the county did put in money in the budget this year, $100,000 for any municipality that had a plan. And what I think the county and a lot of villages and towns are doing is looking at Fayetteville and saying, how are you going to do it? How effective is it going to be? What's going to be the consequences of your plan? And will it work? And I think they're sitting back a little bit watching us to see how effective it is. I think there will be a county plan. They are putting a committee together at the county level. One of our committee members is asked to serve on the commission that the county is doing. I think there will be a rollout of that plan in the future. I think right now is a lot of people are hesitant to get into this because of the public reaction. And I got to tell you, it's been an interesting reaction. As I tell people, there's passions on both sides. But if you've dealt with it, and you've had somebody with Lyme disease or a car accident or something's happened, they're much more receptive. The ones that aren't can be a little bit hard to explain to sometimes. I think I'm putting that as politically correctly as I can. But doing nothing isn't working. And I keep going back to that, and I know it sounds simple, but it's true. Doing nothing isn't working. So I think the county is going to do something. They put their money where their mouth is, and they put $100,000 up, and which we're taking advantage of some of that money. But I think the county will take the lead soon as they see effectiveness happen.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. And I'm Nader Maroon, the one that Brian's referring to. So I was elected in 2009 to represent the east side of the city. And when I was going door to door then, the deer issue and Lyme disease was around. And so I have been working tirelessly to try to get this issue in the forefront. And the $100,000 that Mark is referring to came as a result of me going over to ask the county legislature to put money in the budget because I had been unsuccessful of getting money in the city budget because of the politics, which I agree with Mark. I'm not a politician either. I'm a public servant, and I recognize the problem that is there. So the county plan that we're working on, and I would imagine I will be part of that committee as well, will include the city of Syracuse in that activity. And I've said to Chairman McMahon and County Legislator Irvin, that's also here, that it's not a one-time thing. We have to commit dollars long-term. I'm also working with Assemblyman Pam Hunter, Assemblywoman Pam Hunter, to get money in the state budget to come to Onondaga County to add to it. Because I know that the art of the long view here is we're going to have a lot of money to be able to address this problem. And the other point that I would like to make, and I appreciate what Mark is trying to do, but he's in a smaller microcosm than I am in the city of Syracuse. And I don't know, at this point in time, we don't have the capacity in a public space to be able to do what he's doing. We could do it neighborhood by neighborhood, but to be able to do that, we had to have the money the county just put in there. So we have to give the up-to-date data to places like St. Mary's Cemetery, to Syracuse University, to, who am I leaving off, Brian? The Le Moyne College, to say, these are where the clusters of the deer are. This is where they habitat. This is the path that they're coming through. Can we utilize those private spaces to be able to do the job that we do? Because if we just did it in the neighborhood where I live on Euclid Avenue, the problem is just going to continue because the deer all migrate from around Le Moyne College or from St. Mary's area in that wooded area. We need to get at the source of where they are. And Mark, I'm sure, knows this with state parks, with Green Lakes, because that's where the deer are coming from. They're not originating from the village of Fayetteville. They're coming from the state park. And so the state parks are going to have to get involved in this. And the last point I want to make about this is that the public education component is very significant in this effort. We as individuals have to take the responsibility about preventing our own property with the field mice and the mammals that are on there to prevent us from getting the Lyme disease. The deer are a problem, but it's also the prevention that we need to do. And then to that point, I went to the county health director, commissioner, and said, we need to have an aggressive plan. I've spoken to Cornell Cooperative. They need to be more aggressive in terms of their public education about this. I've talked to the American Medical Association. We need to get the doctors and people that are involved with this Lyme disease to be helpful and proactive about it. So while I respect your concern about leadership, we're there. We're trying to do, and believe me, every day we're working towards this, and we will find the solution, and we will have. I'm termed out of office in 2017, but I promise you, before I go, we'll have a plan in place. Thank you.
Thank you, Nader. And I'm witness to some of the evolution that has occurred because of Nader's efforts. The public education has increased tremendously, so thank you. I wanted to go back to the question of rodent control, because obviously deer are not the only issue. Do you have any information about that? It seems to me years ago, maybe 20, 30 years ago, I recall both the city and perhaps the county having rodent control programs as a specific part of the health department in the county, and I don't know what agency in the city, but I don't hear about that anymore. Is there still such a thing? Should there be such a thing? What can we do?
Yeah, so it's a good question, and I'm sorry. I don't work for the county. I don't really understand all of their programs completely, but I suspect that you could get a lot of good information from them. What we're really talking about is managing the ticks that are getting the disease from the rodents whom they bite. So there are lots of really good tools out there for very directly applying a pesticide to these small mammals that kills the ticks in the nest. So, and it's proven technology. If it's like every other pesticide, if it's deployed properly, it works. And they're very easy to use. Tick tubes, I'm sure you've seen these. It's a real simple concept. You can make them yourselves, for crying out loud. It's a toilet roll toilet paper roll with cotton stuffed in it that's been soaked in pyrethrins, or permethrin is the synthetic version. Pyrethrins is a derivative of chrysanthemums. It's on the organic standard, by the way. So, yes, you stick it in a tube, you put it out at the right time and in the right places. The little mice go in there, they steal the cotton for their nesting material. Usually they nest right in there, and it kills all the ticks. It doesn't kill the mouse, doesn't kill the babies, it kills the ticks. And that's what you want to be able to do to manage the ticks in your own little personal space. So I suspect the county's got a lot more information on that.
One of the things that Nader touched on is public education, and that's what our committee is looking at doing after this. The USDA does their work, but we've already looked at chickens actually eat ticks. They love them. I'm embarrassed to say, passed a law that said no chickens like 4 years ago because we got a complaint on it. And now we're actually thinking of reversing that and trying a beta site near the park to do chickens to have that. But the public education, you're 100% right. This can't be the government's going to solve this problem because it's not going to happen. It has to be a partnership with the private and public working together to solve this problem.
Good morning. This has been very informative. As a resident of the town of Manlius who lives just on the fringe of the village of Fayetteville, I just have to applaud Mark, and I can't tell you how excited we are to see the effects of that. We live basically ground zero. We're across the street from Green Lakes. And again, and we've got that forever wild area of the village of Fayetteville. Literally, our property abuts the village of Fayetteville area. Is that going to be one of the targeted areas, Mayor?
No comment.
One more question we have time for.
Hi, Peter Ricardo, Food Bank of Central New York, and not really a question. I just wanted to thank Mark for mentioning us as being part of this potential loop. I'm the food sourcer for the food bank, and I can tell you about 30% of our roughly 14 million pounds a year, 36,000 meals a day in 11 counties, about a third of that is donated. Animal protein is not high on the list of donations. That's very premium stuff we seek. So every fall and hunting season, I will get calls, is there going to be venison? Is there more venison? And we get actually 3,000 to 5,000 pounds a year from the hunters, which is very generous. We love it, but it's gone in a heartbeat. So rest assured, in a process like this, there is a place for this meat to go. I think it's, from my perspective, it's a wonderful end rather than laying in a ditch or wasting in a field. So just that comment. Thanks so much. And thank you. You're a wonderful community. We get a lot of support from you. So thanks.
So again, I want to thank both Mark and Brian for joining us today. I knew this was going to be a very interesting topic. And thank you all for coming. Thanks.